Welcome to the Perry Johnson Registrars Podcast, where you can expect the latest news and discussions related to the management systems certification industry. Today's episode is a previously recorded webinar. If you would like to tune in to our upcoming webinars, visit our website at www.pjr.com/webinar or give us a follow on your favorite podcast app. Thank you for tuning in.
Okay, good morning, everyone. I'd like to welcome you all to the Interaction of Processes and its Importance to a Successful Audit webinar. My name is Joe Krolikowski. I am the QMS Program Manager for PJR. A couple of notes for our participants today. All of you are on mute, but we absolutely want to address your questions, so please utilize the question portion of the dashboard. I will address questions at the end of my presentation. Now, our topics for today, we're going to kind of dig into some background on why this is such a key issue and why it's such a big deal during your audit. We'll unpack where in ISO 9001:2015 these requirements are rooted. We'll discuss both what is and what is not a process. And then we've got some strategies for you on meeting this requirement, potentially with very little adjustment to your existing documentation. We've also got some examples for you on how this can be done, examples that have been accepted in past audits. We'll also discuss the impact of outsourcing on this activity. So let's begin. Now, back in 2014, quite some time ago, we were told that we had to be a little more strict in our assessment of client interaction of process documents. And part of what was driving that change was the pending revision to ISO 17021, which we ultimately got the following year in 2015. Now, ISO 17021, you can think of that as sort of a ISO 9001 for certification bodies. It's a set of requirements that we have to abide by or we don't get to keep our accreditation. Now, within that document, there's a clause that reads as follows. It says that an audit program for the full certification cycle shall be developed to identify the audit activities required to demonstrate that the client's management system fulfills the requirements for certification. Now, the key part of that phrase is this business about the client's management system. So in other words, we have to perform our audits, document our audits, et cetera, in such a way that they are reflective of our client's management system. So that translates to we have to perform the audit against your processes. And only your processes. We're not allowed to make up what your process names are. We're not allowed to invent what your processes are. That's not our function. That we're not permitted to do that. So we have to use your interaction of processes document in completing the audit report, preparing the audit plan, etc. Now, most of our clients do a decent enough job of putting the interaction of processes or IOP together. But if it is not a well-rendered document, it can be very difficult for our auditors to do an effective job of completing their audit, writing the plan, what have you. So we've instructed our auditors, and these instructions obviously have been in place for some time, that if the documents they are presented do not do an effective job of identifying what the processes are, they need to issue a nonconformance against the client for that concern. Now, in terms of where the nonconformance would be cited, we would look to ISO 9001:2015, and in particular, the verbiage that is present in section 4.4. There's provisions, actually three clauses that are predominantly in play here. Firstly, that you shall determine the processes that are needed for the quality management system. That comes in 441. 441 continues to say that you need to determine the sequence and interaction of those processes. And then in 442, it states that you need to maintain documented information to support the operation of your processes. So these are the requirements that we kind of look to and say, okay, this is where it establishes that you need to determine what your processes are and determine how they interact and have something that you can present for audit review that represents the conclusion of that analysis. Now in ISO 9000, which that is the fundamentals and vocabulary document. In ISO 9000, there is a definition for process that's provided. And that definition is a set of interrelated or interacting activities that use inputs to deliver an intended result. And this is a key aspect of how we understand what is a process. Obviously, it's a good idea to start with the official definition. And we've been trained to kind of hone in on this business of interrelated or interacting activities. This helps us understand that a process is not a single step. It's a series of activities that are focused on a shared goal. Now, in terms of what are typical processes, I've provided a list here of process designations that come up most often, or very often, I should say. Certainly, we see sales, purchasing, production, which is obviously a collective term that's meant to represent a lot of different things, shipping, design and development. Now, obviously, the interaction of processes, the IOP, it needs to be a reflection of what you and your organization have concluded your processes are. Now, if you are a simple operation, a simple company with just a handful of processes, well, that's fine. As long as those processes collectively represent a fulfillment of ISO 9001:2015, that's okay. We have lots of companies that we work with that have three processes, four processes, et cetera. In a very simple operation, that's completely conceivable. You just need to be prepared to demonstrate how do those processes fulfill the ISO 9001 requirements. Now, in terms of IOP documents that get rejected, the ones that are going to get written up on audit day, these are going to be one of a few possibilities. An IOP that represents steps within a single process as full processes. So in other words, if we have a process called create work order, another one called issue production schedule, another one called complete work order, et cetera. This is going to be potentially problematic. If you look at this list I've given you here, it's conceivable that these are five steps of a single process, but they are likely not processes by themselves. So that's concerning. If we have an IOP that presents sections from the applicable standard, say from ISO 9001, as the processes, that's going to be regarded with concern. I mean, honestly, do you really have a process that you call resource management? Isn't that more a process, isn't that more a concept that is presented in ISO 9001:2015? Think about that. So if you have an interaction of process document that reflects these types of concerns, we've trained our auditors to write a nonconformance for those issues. Now, in terms of what you can do, you know, let's say that you're new to certification and you've put together an interaction of processes document, but maybe it's too busy. Maybe you're looking at it and you think, you know what, this really isn't a representation of our processes. This is a process flow of how an order travels through our company, that sort of thing. Mind you, we recognize that for a lot of companies, there's a lot of work that goes into putting even that together. And we want to recognize that even that type of document is salvageable in terms of being used to represent what your processes are. And most of the time, you just need to tweak it in a couple of ways. So let's go over what those adjustments might consist of. Is I'm going to show you a sample of an interaction of processes document, and we're going to improve it in two ways. And we're going to start by reviewing the raw interaction of processes document. Now, this example that we're going to be looking at, this was created solely for this presentation. This is not taken as reflective of any particular PJR client. Okay, so here is our raw interaction of processes document. Now, as you can see here, we have 12 boxes and we have two decision diamonds. So do we take this to mean that the organization has 12 processes? Well, probably not. Do we consider, for example, order entered in the mainframe system? Is that a process unto itself? Issue a purchase order to a supplier. Is that a process unto itself? Again, remembering what ISO 9000 defines a process as, a set of interrelating or interacting activities for transforming inputs into outputs. So the first thing we're going to do to improve this sample IOP is we're going to identify support processes. Because if we jump back, you'll note that this is basically an order flow. There's really nothing in here about training. There's nothing in here about corrective action, et cetera. And those are requirements from ISO 9001. So again, we're going to identify what are the support activities here. Now, ISO 9000 and ISO 9001, they don't really draw any particular distinction between classification of processes. But this is something that we see fairly often, this idea of key or core processes. But you still need to identify all of these other activities. Again, remember, your processes need to account for the entire ISO 9001:2015 standard. All of those requirements need to be accounted for in the named processes. So this idea of support processes is very common. So let's make this first adjustment. Okay, so in the lower right, we now have a support processes box. And this is kind of a inclusive item here. We've got management review, internal auditing, training, corrective action, etc. So there's a lot of stuff in here, and you'll note it is kind of free-floating and pointing in all directions. That's meant to be indicative that these support processes support everything else, and that's a very common technique that's used for that type of designator. So now we've got more assurance that all of the requirements from ISO 9001 are reflected in this IOP. Now, for our second improvement, we're going to create an IOP key. Now, this is another strategy that we see very often so that we have a better identification of what the processes are. Now, this is done sometimes by numbering or alpha characters. For this particular model, we're going to use color coding. This is something else that is very common. So let's make this last improvement here. So now we have a color code that's been applied to this, And we can see that from our 12 steps, now 13 with the support processes box having been added, we actually have 6 individual processes that have been identified. And these include sales order entry, purchasing, production, shipping, quality, and support. Now, of the original IOP items, only shipping was a process unto itself. Every other step on here had a minimum of 3 of these boxes that were reflected in the designation of processes. So again, from 13, we have actually identified 6 processes. So, you'll notice the original raw IOP that we started with, we haven't changed it. This is something that's been retained in this new and improved model. So by these 2 adjustments, as I said, we've kept the content as it was before, but now we know what the processes are, and we now have reflection of support processes, meaning that we can feel assured that all of the requirements of ISO 9001 are reflected in these process designations. This IOP is ready for audit assessment. Obviously, we have been working with many clients for many years, and we recognize that there are a lot of different ways that this can be accomplished, a lot of different approaches to preparing an IOP. So what we've done is we've gathered up some varied examples of this, and we've prepared a series of slides that we're going to take you through to show you how some of the other companies have done this. Now, these are all actual real-world examples from companies that were, at least at one time, PJR clients, and in all cases, permission was given to share these examples. Here's our first example. As you can see on the right, we have kind of a top-down flow of processes. In this particular company's case, you'll note they have a special step for production scheduling. They have a special call-out step for final quality check. And much as in the case of our test model, we have support processes kind of disconnected, but identified in such a way that it's intended to reflect a support for the entire system at large. Here's kind of an interesting model. Again, you'll note that the support processes, this time they're kind of called out as management related. They're off to the side and disconnected. What I like about this IOP is in a couple of cases, the unique nature of the process names. This company clearly put some thought into what their process designations needed to be. So they have, for example, overhaul as a standalone process, inventory management as a standalone process, and so forth. So, and they've clearly put some work into where are the process interactions that are actually taking place. For example, quoting interfaces with both work order receiving inspection and overhaul, but not inventory management or shipping. So that's intended to kind of reflect some processes interacting and some not so much. This is an interesting approach to an IOP. This particular approach is commonly referred to as swim lane. Now, in this particular company's case, they came to the conclusion that they had 4 distinct processes. As you can see on the left, these processes are labeled sales, purchasing, production, and support. And again, under support, we have multiple process steps, if you will, that support the other 3 main processes at large. Also, you will note that sales and purchasing kind of begin independent of each other, but they sort of meet in the middle and ultimately lead to the initiation of the production step. Interestingly here, production is taken to be inclusive of the shipping step as well. And that's perfectly fine if that's how it operates in practice. Another interesting model here, in this particular case, they've used yellow highlighting to indicate what their core processes are. And they've identified that if it isn't highlighted, it falls under support. So if we take that idea, there are six processes in play here. The five that are highlighted and the rest all kind of collected together under the heading support. Now, again, what I like to point out on this item is the somewhat unique nature of the process designations. They have a process that they call service exchange. They have a process that they call repair and return, etc. So again, this is an organization that clearly puts some thought into what are the actual process designations that we use. Now, another layer of requirements that kind of adds to this is this idea of outsourced processes. Now, many of our clients outsource a few or even several of their processes to external providers. Now, external provider is defined as a provider that is not part of the organization. Now, that's an inclusive term, and it refers to a wide variety of possibilities. Could be subcontractors, could be traditional suppliers, could be partner companies, parent companies, what have you. Now, we actually have a whole separate webinar that addresses the topic of outsourcing, and that's titled Non-Applicable Clauses, Permissible Exclusions, Exemptions. Now, there are a variety of outsourced process possibilities. Right up at the top, calibration and verification of measurement devices. This is something that we see outsourced often. It's necessary for an organization to work with an outside provider to validate their measurement devices. It could extend to training, could extend to the design activity, non-conforming product disposal, and so forth. So, how does this factor into the IOP document? Well, again, we would refer back to the applicable requirements from ISO 9001 that are in play. As we mentioned earlier, 441, you are required to determine your processes that make up your quality management system. In 841, it requires that you maintain control over any outsourced processes. And in 442, again, documented information supporting the operation of your processes. Now, we've recently had some accreditation body feedback that has reinforced our position that this means the IOP has to identify what your outsourced processes are. So it has to reflect what are the processes and which of these processes are fully or partially provided by an outside party. So how might you do this? Well, there's a couple of ways this can be done. You might use a special font. You might use bold underlined text. You might give outsourced processes their own special place on the IOP. There's a lot of ways that that can be done. The approach to be taken is entirely up to you. In conclusion, we want to ensure that we are providing our clients with a value-added audit while meeting all applicable requirements. It is our hope that this presentation will help you develop an even better understanding of what your processes are. I'd like to invite you to tune in for one of our other webinars. I have a presentation about ISO 9001 2015. It is a breakdown on the more common issues that come up in ISO 9001 2015 audits and what is typically expected for those areas. I also have a presentation entitled Non-Applicable Clauses, Exclusions, Exemptions, Developing a Better Understanding of What Can and What Cannot Be Excused in an Audit Assessment. Now, both of those presentations are shown roughly semi-annually, and they are both very popular. So I do invite you to tune in for either or both of those. We have webinars on a wide variety of other topics, including stage one auditing, AS9100, ITF16949, and so forth. If you'd like to be kept informed of the latest news automatically, the best way for you to do that is to visit our website at www.pjr.com. Go to the bottom of the page, enter your email address in the provided space, and click subscribe. You will be opted in for automatic updates on changes to the standards, upcoming webinars, and other points of information. I'd like to thank you for your time, and I'm going to go ahead and unlock the question portion of the dashboard and see if we have any questions today. Okay, we do have a couple of questions here from Nelu Pinero Cordero. When there is a change in our high-level process workflow, who should we inform to? During the past, surveillance audit process was updated by PJR and the audit plan was wrong. Well, Nelut, if you've updated your process designations and you know you have an upcoming audit, the best way for that to be addressed is to share that updated process interaction with the auditor as soon as possible. If you have an established auditor that you've been working with, you can even reach out to that person in advance before the audit is actually scheduled. Either of those would be acceptable. Maxine Campbell asks, should the audit plan include the process steps displayed in the IOP diagram? Absolutely, yes. And if Maxine, if you're receiving an audit plan that bears no resemblance to your process designations, you need to kick that back to the auditor and tell that person, no, you have not effectively put an audit plan together that reflects what my company is all about. You absolutely have a right to do that. For any other questions today? Okay, very good. Well, thank you all. Have a great week.